This is KJ Live. Yeah! With Chris Johnson. And Chris is having conversations with influencers in the sports world and entertainment industry. Hey, hey. Now here's Chris Johnson.
You're now tuned in to KJ Live. Happy New Year, everybody. Today's guest on the show is a California icon. He's arguably the greatest athlete, all-around athlete to ever race the field or the court simultaneously, okay, in the state of California. He was all Pac-10 in basketball at the University of Southern California. Let's welcome in the boss, Stace Bozeman. What's up, Stace?
How's it going there, player, man? It's nice to see you, man.
Yeah, same here, brother, man. Hey, it's been so long, man. You're like one of the most, like, just low-key dudes. You know, nobody can find you on social media. You know, nobody, like, ask where Stace is at, man. Like, yeah, he's on Facebook. That's it. What's up with that, man? Why are you so low-key, dog?
I don't know, man. You know, I guess you are who you are. I've always been like that, man. Try to keep a low profile. Try to stay out the way. It just seems easier.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure, man. But one of the things I wanted to do today, brother, is kind of just talk about your journey through athletics, man. You come out of a part of the country, man, that has produced some of the greatest athletes to ever play, yourself included. Talk about your upbringing, man. Where were you born? What city? What neighborhood? And what influence did that neighborhood have on you growing up?
I was born, March 10, 1974. I was actually born in the city of Culver City. I was actually born in Culver City, and but I resided on, like you said, Hoover in 84. And I can't believe you found that, man. And that's actually, man, over there, it's like that was like when the times, when crack and gangs kind of kicked in, you know what I mean? Like full flare. So like every day it was like, it was wild over there. Either we was breaking in houses or we was fighting, but at some point we played throw up tackle. Like we played football in the streets. I'm talking about tackle on concrete. We hitting cars.
Damn.
That's why I developed the love for football over there though. I always wanted to be like Lynn Swan, who was my childhood idol, and I just took it from there.
So you saying it was at the beginning of the crack era.
Yeah.
You in the street playing football. Just talk about like what a day would look like, man. You coming from school, man. Dudes is on the corner. You had temptations there. Dudes slanging. You seeing this stuff? Like,
and you really seeing it. Like you might be walking down the street in an alley and you seeing some guy over there getting right, you know, hitting the pipe or doing whatever he's doing.
Damn.
We had so much energy. I think, like, we couldn't stay still. So we was either, like, for real, like, robbing cars, sneaking at people's windows. But at some point, we always find time for football. And football, and knowing that at some point throughout the day that I was going to play football kept me on the right path.
And, man, I can't imagine what them games in the street must have looked like, man, because you think of the cars, so you got to dodge the cars, the traffic, and then the dudes you playing against.
Oh, man, there's no age limit. We got cats out there like 9 and cats out there like 14. So
that's real.
It was wild, man. You know, the east side is uncut over there, man. But thank God, you know, mom's got a different kind of job. She became a 911 operator, so we moved to the city of Inglewood. That's why I started playing organized ball.
And how old were you when you moved to the Wood?
Moved to the Wood, I was 8 years old.
Okay. And you played organized ball. Where did you start off? What park or what rec center did you start off? At
the legendary Darby Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I started out. I went up there to that was a local park. We first moved over there. The first day we moved over there, I'm like, it's a park around here? Wow. Went to the park we just playing ball and stuff, and Cass is going to sign up for football. I'm like, what y'all doing? I'm like, so it's organized games? So I run home, grab mom's lighter or something. I'm like, yeah, it's free. Come sign me up.
Yeah.
We get there, it's like $100. She looking at me like crazy. I'm like, yeah, sign that. So that's where I signed up at, and I started playing football for Darby Park for the Inglewood Incas. That was my first team, Inglewood Incas.
Wow. So was this tackle or was this flag at first? Tackle. Oh, so straight tackle at first.
Straight now, tackle, helmet, everything.
Now, did y'all compete against, like, you know, Carson and all these other type of programs and stuff?
Carson, Linwood, Hartline, like all the city schools. Yeah, it was real. Yeah.
Who were some of the guys, man? Because my dad grew up playing at Sportsman's Park, which Jesse Owens Park. So he always talks about him, James Lofton, the old receiver from the Bucks. They grew up together.
That's why I played basketball at Sportsman. I played basketball at Jesse Owens Park. I didn't play basketball at Darby.
Okay.
At Jesse Owens, because I wasn't nice enough to play at Darby.
Oh, okay. That's real.
So I want Jesse Owens. It was kind of more rough and rugged. So, cats would work with me. But
were there any other cats? Were there any other cats, like, you know, guys we may know that you came up with that along at Darby too?
Darby, Curtis Conway was always my football bro, Jamel Holloway.
Oh, wow.
Lindsey Hunter. There's so many guys over there, man. But Curtis was pretty cool, man.
That's real. And so you're doing the football thing. You get in the morning side. What school did you start off at? What was your first elementary school in the morning at Inglewood?
I went to Warren Lane Elementary.
Okay. And now, was there a difference as far as the adjustment process, as far as being from growing up on the east side and then going to Inglewood, or was it cool?
It was a big adjustment because Cass and Inglewood was kind of way, a little bit more playerist, kind of laid back, you know. Cass, like, you know, dressed in, like, you know, had outfits on, and like
it was matching.
Yeah, and all that, you know, shoes matching, name brand stuff, and come from where I come from, you were just getting how you was getting it, you know.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a shell shock. And my first year was actually kind of rough for me to fit in because I was always kind of a little socially awkward, and it was kind of really kind of rough for me to fit in over there for like the first year.
Yeah.
One for me being pretty good in ball. It would have been really, really rough. All kind of cut that brother from me, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, I hear that a lot, man. A lot of guys that, you know, may have struggled with, you know, the social part of the thing, they kind of gravitated towards just hooping or just playing football, just doing one thing and then immersing themselves in that. Does that describe what you kind of did? Or
that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
Man, you know, described it to a T, and people probably really didn't know that about me. But I was all flamboyant, but I was just the opposite, you know. So concentrating on the sport and actually, meeting Dominic Ellison, my best friend, kind of helped me out a lot.
Yeah. How old were you when you and Dom met, man?
About 10, 11.
Wow.
2 years when I got into the wood, by 10, 11.
That's right, man. Because you guys had that you guys had a couple movies done on you, Hardwood Dreams, and they followed you guys from pretty young, man.
Yeah. Well, they followed us. Hardwood Dreams, the first one, they followed us our whole senior year in high school.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it was like every day, though. It was like, so they was getting stuff they weren't supposed to get, you know?
Yeah.
They'll show up at your house, you know, Friday, like with the camera, like, hey, what are you doing? It's not camera time.
How did you adjust to that, man? You know, you're in Inglewood, you decide to go to Morningside, and now you got cameras in your face. How did you adjust to that?
I really didn't, because for me, I never wanted to do it because of this that point. I don't want cameras following me around all the time, and it just made it a show everywhere you went. Like every, you know, just following you to class, following you to lunch, it just put a lot of attention and pressure on you that I didn't want. But it wasn't my decision towards the end because it's part of a team, and the team wanted to do it for publicity and stuff like that. So.
And I also think, man, it was at a time when that type of story was, you know, it was really important to tell. You know, you had other stories that they were doing documentaries of the inner city high school athlete and his plight. And I think that it shed the light on a lot of things, man, about what people like yourself actually had to go through on the day to day. A lot of times we hear about this stuff, but once you see it, you know, on the big screen, it kind of changes your perspective. But I think you guys had a hell of a run, man. You guys were obviously one of the best teams in the country. What it was most memorable about that senior year, like a memorable game, a memorable moment when the cameras were on you, man?
Probably when we played Artesia, man. You know, well, my career, I only hit a couple game winners. You don't hit too, like, you're like you hitting game winners every game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a big game, a big stage, and I hit a three to win the game, and that was probably the most memorable as far as my senior year, as far as basketball.
Wait, I think I remember hearing about that. Wait, that's the one you like. Didn't you get the rebound and dribble it out or something?
Yeah, I got the rebound and dribble it out. And why? I don't know. I guess I was just nervous. You know, keep it real. I don't know why I dribbled out because I could have just put it right back in.
Yeah, yeah. But you went and pulled the three.
And let it fly, and it was game, man. And that's why I remember so much. I was like, what was I doing? Like,
wow. No, that was
when you're competing, sometimes such stuff take over. You just don't know what you and just just meant to happen, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I hit a finger roll from about 15 feet out at the sports arena against Modern Day, man. I don't know what I was doing. I just got it. I just threw it up. Hey, Stace, I just threw that thing up, dog. Same exact type of scenario. It was like when I look back, I'm like, what was I thinking? I'm shooting a finger roll from 15 feet in 94, 93.
Hey, right. But look, I got one question for you, man. I always want to ask you, man. Like, how does it feel to go for a 50 ball in college?
Oh, man. It wasn't 50, man. It felt like
54? What was it?
No, it was 36. It felt like it was 25 in the first half. It should have been 50. It should have been 50, but they stopped passing it to me in the second half. But no, it felt good, brother. No, it felt good, man. That was against Kyle Sharif and them, man. But that was during the heyday of the Pac-10, man. That was a live time, man. But
I'm trying to tell people.
But stay. Something I wanted to find out from you, man. During this time, right? So you're at Morningside, man. You're a baller. You're a star, two sport athlete. I remember you guys. I think you guys win state in football too.
Yeah, we won state in football, but they actually took the title back because we had a player that was a lineman that was too old.
Oh, okay. Back when they used to pop you for being too old. Nowadays, you can be like 22 and it's no problem. It's no problem. Hey, it's no
bananas in Cali like that. Right?
Hey, it's no problem. Okay. So they took it away. But what I wanted to know, man, like when we hear about guys, your reputation in high school was like, oh, Stacey's, you know, he real with it. You know, he's real. So I wanted to know how much of that persona or that reputation was real. And how much of it was kind of a legendary thing that people were just kind of saying and putting a lot on it? And how much of it was real?
I mean, you know, nothing's never 100% real when you hear it in the media, you know, but I'll probably say 50% of it. 50% of it. Because, I was actively in the gang and I was in the streets. So I can't think about that. That's just who I was at that time. And I think that kind of helped my toughness because on a day-to-day life in the streets and where I'm from, in Inglewood and the Bottoms and stuff like that, it can get pretty rough.
Yeah.
I think that kind of helped me as far as like, you know, as far as in basketball and football, because guys are not there in your best interest. Elbows here, belt and you know, tripping you here and there and there. But, you know, it just didn't really faze me like that.
What was that influence in your life that kept you on that path, that straight and narrow, the one that was Stace's, you know, going to college and he's gonna, you know, be going to class and being eligible and playing and being all Pac-12. What was the influence in your life that helped you kind of stay on that path?
It was for me, it was always my mom, rest in peace. She just always, I mean, even when I was messing up, like my mom's hit the block. People be like, hey, but your mom just came. I'm like, what? I'm like, man, where'd she go? I'm like, all right, let me, you know what I mean? Mom's was just, she was always, even like, she just never quit on me. Even because, you know how it is. You don't always make the best decisions when you're a youngster. So,
yeah.
But in the bad times, she never quit on me. And when it was bad, I always saw how much fight she had in her that I wanted to kind of make it right and try to get back on the right path, you know?
Absolutely. Talk about your recruiting process at this time as a two-sport athlete, man. I know you had some of the top schools in the country. The thing I was kind of curious about was, you know, where were you real serious about going outside of SC, obviously, like to play, and what schools were going to let you play football and basketball?
Well, Arizona was a school I was. I take that back. Connecticut was a school I was going to go to, man. I went on my trip. I committed and everything, man.
Wow. UConn, huh?
Yeah, man. I went there. I had such a great time and it was such a family atmosphere. It was just, and Calhoun was just the best, man. It was something about him. It just made you want to run through a wall. You know what I mean? Like I was on my recruit trip. I'm like, man, let's hoop. I just grabbed some shoes. He threw me some shoes and I was hooping. So it was, I understood when I went there that it was going to be about business and trying to get somewhere, and that's what I wanted to do.
That's crazy. Any other schools?
Arizona, Lou Olson used to come up to my school, man, and have lunch with me like at least four or five times. I'm sitting there with Lou. Oh, and Riverside, we in the bottoms.
Literally.
Lou and Jesse Evans.
Yes, sir. Jesse Evans.
Chilling, and, they was gonna let me play both. They was gonna let me play both, man.
Okay.
Then SC just put it on real thick, man. And me and Rav just, I just got this connection with Rav, man, I still have to the day.
Yeah.
Man, it was like for a black man, for me, seeing a black man that successful and powerful. Just did something to me, man. It just like I just wanted to play for Rap, you know.
Yeah.
He felt like Martin Luther King speech, you know. It was more than sports and basketball, and when I like fractured my ankle my senior year in football, I missed like six games. I kind of understood that like sports wouldn't be there forever.
Yeah.
And Rap was on that path where sports is not here forever, but you as a person is like better yourself as a man. You know, blase, and I just took to that, and I just had to play for Rav.
Oh, that's real. I always wondered just kind of what was going on over the SC, how the inner workings work. You know, obviously, Stace, we was rivals at the time, and so yeah. It was like you wasn't really concerned about nothing but beating these dudes, and you hated these dudes or whatever.
And I'm 1-7. I only won one game. My freshman year, we beat at the sports arena. Ever since then, donuts.
Yeah. I remember Mark. Was that the one Mark Boyd and Ed got into it?
Yeah. I tried to bang on Ed, and Ed just threw me to the ground, man. And I thought, personally, my eyes, I thought Ed Abang was the best high school basketball player I ever seen.
Oh, man, I can go on and on about Ed, man. First time I saw Ed, I was in the eighth grade, dog. I walk in the gym, and, you know, he's taking off from the dotted on somebody. Oh, I'm just like, who is this guy? And I came home and told my dad, man, Ed O'Bannon.
Yeah, I seen that like an AAU game where it was like him, Tracy Murray, Butler.
Yeah.
I was watching the game. I'm like, I'm glad I played football because like I could never be this good. Like they was like they was out there like professionals in high school, really.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So when you started off at SC, you came in as a wing. Right. A straight up wing. By the time you were a senior, man, I remember you being at the one.
Yeah.
How did that process of development go for you at SC as far as just coming in as a certain position? And then when you had a chance to be a professional, you had a coach that put you in a position I think he felt like would be your best position as a pro.
Right. Because, you know, Henry Bibby put me at the one. And Henry Bibby, you know, he has a lot of basketball knowledge. People probably don't know about him a lot, but he has a lot. He's won on every level. He played for John Wooden, CBA championship, the NBA championship. So he has a lot of knowledge. And he thought that would be the best position that I can, like, further my basketball career, and which it was.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I graduated, like, as soon as I left SC, everybody thought I was a point guard. It was like, you too little to play, you know, blase to win. You know how it is in the league. You know how
to play
in heightened position.
Especially back then.
Now you might get away with it now because everybody's pretty much freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. It's not really positions right now. So
yeah.
But it was a little struggle at first though, playing my first like 6 or 7 games playing for Bibby because he demanded a lot from the one. And it's a different game from up top looking down than rather getting it. You know what I mean? You know how
people don't understand the angles and the views on the court. Now you're looking at a whole nother view with dudes on either side, except, you know, before you had the other dudes on that side, it made life a little bit easier. But you did a hell of a job, man. First team, all Pac-10, kind of learning that new position just was a testament. I mean, you're one of the toughest dudes that we had to play against. We always, you know, it was like, oh shit, we got Stace in them. And, you know, you had to bring your A game. You had to come with all your good stuff, or, you know, you was getting ripped, or you might get banged on, you know, something might happen that was going to be embarrassing. Hey, when you look back on your time at SC, man, and all the ups and downs and, you know, everything that was good and everything that was bad, do you think that it was, you stayed too close to home to go to college? Do you think you would have been better off somewhere else? Or do you think that SC, it was all good for you to be at SC?
It was. I honestly think, to be real with you, I think I should have went away to college because I'd have been a little bit more focused. Because my freshman year, I moved back home. Like, so I'll be playing the games and I'm right to the hood.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, I didn't really leave. So, it wasn't the first time I seen real work was when I was with you.
Yeah.
Like, is this cool? Not before the
in Qatar.
Like, this dude, this come on, like, hey man, Chris is crazy. This dude, like, you were like, like was getting it in. So I was like, damn. So after that, that's when I would develop my work ethic, actually. But if I went away to school, I think I'd have been a little bit more focused on as far as the business part, as far as getting better as a player, as an athlete.
Yeah. Well, that you know, we all make our choices, man. But I always think, like, I ask myself the same question. If I didn't go to UCLA and try to follow my dad's footsteps, if I would have went to, because I had Kelvin Sampson at Washington State, I was rocking with Rick Majerus at Utah, I was rocking with, and then George McCorn at Arizona State, Bill Frieder, you know, I was like, yeah, I want to see what's up with all that, because they were going to let me like handle it. And kind of, you know, back then I was a sitter. And so, you know, UCLA was like, yeah, you're going to play the sitter or whatever. They were like, yo, you're going to come in and be, you know, like a point forward. I was like, shoot. But I'm happy at the decision I made, man. You know how it is when we look back on stuff. Right after USC, you had a chance to do a couple of things. I remember you telling me this when I had you out of Qatar. Now, you had, I think, two situations, right? You had the Raiders and you had Chicago pre-draft kind of at the same time, or am I getting the chronology wrong?
Right at the same time. It was like, I went to the Raiders camp, right? And 2 days in, like 3 days into that, the pre-draft camp started. So I had to leave a day early. Yeah. So the day I was supposed to leave, they came to me that morning and woke me up and got me in this meeting room. And mind me, all this business stuff to me is different, man. Cause I was like, I just wanted to hoop or play ball. I didn't understand this part of the game, you know? So they telling me right there and now, they offered me to be on the practice squad. I think the practice squad was getting like $175,000 a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. I had to like, I'm like, oh, I'm my flight leaving tomorrow morning. I'm going to Chicago. I'm going to see. I didn't put all that work into basketball just to not like give it a, like I thought I'd be quitting personally. And that's not what it was. But if I had to do over, I probably would have signed that letter right there to the practice squad. But they was either sign with us or do what you do. So I called my agent. My agent, I couldn't get to him. I'm like, I ain't gonna be able to do that, man. I gotta go at least see if I can make it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I made that decision.
And so you actually went through like a mini camp with the Raiders where you actually were playing like DB or safety and.
I was playing the man corner, which was I was playing the left corner.
Oh wow!
And I went out there for 5 days. They had drafted. That's the year they drafted my boy number one. Rest in peace, Darrell Russell.
D. Russ.
They drafted him number one. We was on a plane together actually. He actually looked out for me, man.
I love D. Russ, man. D. Russ used to be, because that's Jelani McCoy's best friend. So he's
not Jelani McCoy's best friend.
D. Russ used to be at UCLA messing with us all the time. Hey, D. Russ saved. Look, Stace, I got to tell you this. D. Russ saved my life one time, man. I was over at SC messing with y'all, with the football dudes or whatever, man. But I was messing with it was like Willie McGinnis, a bunch of other them big old Dayron Harris looking dudes just walking around, big diesel.
Right,
man. So I almost got into it with Willie over there, and Daryl was like, had to save me. I look back at it now. I'm like, man, I made it.
Yeah, that's the wrong dude to be getting.
I was about to get mopped up. Jelani was even like, yo, you was tripping, dog. Like, I couldn't have your back that day, KJ. He was like, yo, they was about to. I'm like, but
yeah, because when William them dudes was there, William them dudes wasn't no joke.
Bro, I learned after that, like, hold on, man. But no, man, that's dope. But staying with that Raiders thing, Al Davis hit you up, didn't he?
Yeah, man. He the one contacted me and offered me to come down there. And I was like, I hung up the first time because my homies would be playing and stuff. I'm like, man, stop playing, man. I hung up.
You thought it was somebody else, man. Man.
Like, get off my line with that, man. So, and then I met the dude at when I met him at the facilities. Oh, my, it's like meeting God, man. Like, I've never met a person, and his presence was like, his presence was like E.F. Hutton. Like, people was like pretty much stuck. I've never seen it like that, man. I've been around Magic Johnson. I've been around a lot of dudes.
I've
never seen a presence like that before ever in my life. It was kind of intimidating. I'm not even gonna lie.
and you had to tell them no, man. You walk away. You think that, because I mean, if your first love, my thing is, God, if your first love is football, and you know you had the tools and the talent, how do you, I guess, reconcile saying, you know, no to the Raiders, and then going to Chicago for the pre-draft camp?
Well, I think it all came back to my senior year when I really hurt my ankle. Like, I cut up one time on a cut up, and I broke it, man. And I missed like 6-7 games, man, pretty much. And then I just always reverted back to that. But I don't have nobody really in my ear telling me, like, how you probably have pops like, hey, you need to work 2 dribbles, step back here. No, son, you ain't. That's not your young ability to get it off right there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I didn't really have that, man. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's important. That's important, man.
To make a good educated decision. I didn't have that.
And you had worked so hard, man. You put all your eggs into the basketball basket. You know, you didn't have a lot of tape on football since high school for the NFL. So, I mean, it's sort of like I mean, although you do have an opportunity with the Raiders, and I guess who's the coach, like Bill Callahan or somebody?
Bill Callahan was coach. Bill Callahan was coach.
I could see you being like, you know.
I was balling down there and playing 2 picks. The whole time. You know what I mean? The zone part of it was kind of messing me up a little bit because in the league, you understand, cat might cross your face and you got to hand him off, but you can't leave till you hand him off. Yeah. But you're still responsible for your zone.
Yeah,
it was different with the zone part up there.
That brings up a good point. Tell me about, just as a hooper, I'm just curious about this, like the ins and outs. So like your playbook in football, like how long do you guys spend learning that stuff compared to like a basketball playbook?
Man,
like
you know how basketball is. You have a little meeting, watch a little film for maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah,
say who you got. He give you the little thing. You look. You're like, okay, this guy do this. He's like, what was that? And football. Practice started at 2. We in the classroom at 9. We in there from 9 to 12.
Damn.
In the classroom. It's a real classroom. It's like we got chalk. I mean, back in our day, but you know what I mean? We got chalk. It's like, dude, playbook, but like we really it was really it's a lot. It's a lot just to get to the field. So then we'll do that for 3 hours. We go eat, and we come back and do the little treatment. Then you hit the field at 2:00.
So that's a day. It's a real day. And the good ones.
All day long. And then after the 2:00, we go from 2 to 4, cats hit the weight room.
Yeah, that's what man. And then some do. So that's what they talk about when they say guys spend all day in the facility.
All day with football. It is not a game. You are a football player.
So when they get pissed.
I think I kind of got it to the basketball, but basketball is a little bit more player.
Yo, when they get pissed off at guys like, you know, Jamarcus Russell, for instance, back in the day, he probably was getting out of there at about 2, wasn't putting no extra time in, wasn't putting no extra work. And it sounds like football, that's important. You got to do that because that you're going to be a better player off that study.
Yeah. Just to compete. You might not even be better, but just to like,
yeah,
understand the terminology. And all that stuff, you got to be in that classroom, man.
Man, that's real, man.
That one for Eric Turner, man. Eric Turner was like burping me, dude. He was telling me, "Hey, Bose, you got the deep third." I'm like, "Thank you, my dude," because I wouldn't. It was all foreign to me, you know.
Yeah, Eric Turner, the great, rest in peace, the great safety out of UCLA, number 2 pick in the draft. I remember he was one of the first real UCLA football dudes growing up. I was like,
"Oh man, he went to Cleveland. He went and played with Cleveland."
He was live. He come back in the summer, you know, chains and Benzes. I'd be like, "Who is that?" Yeah, that's Eric Turner.
Man, he was so cool though, man. He was like so cool, man. He was cool.
Yeah. So tell me about Chicago, man. Who was there at the pre-draft camp, man? This is, you know, all your eggs are in this basket, man. Who was there? Who'd you compete against? And how did you play?
The funny thing, you're going to laugh about this, man, because we was 5-0, and we actually won the whole thing. But guess who was my back court mate? It was Sham God. It was me and Sham God. That's why we played in Malaysia. I'm like, hey, you know I'm coming to get that, right?
You worked him in Malaysia, man. That's sick. Oh, Sam God. Okay. Y'all turned it off?
So it was me and him, and Gentry was our coach, man. And Gentry was a real dude, man. He was that's when I knew that the assistant coaches in the leagues are really knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And the head coach, they're really much pretty much running the team.
Yeah.
The head coach is doing the game and all that, but the assistant coach is putting a lot of work in.
Oh yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for Gentry after that camp.
Oh yeah.
But it was fun though, man. That was the year I think Tim Duncan went number 1 that year. Mm-hmm. Tim, Jock and them came up there, but they didn't play. They was top 10s or whatever. So but it was a good camp, man. It was a lot of pressure because they're right there. Like I'm talking about you shooting a J, they right here.
Yeah.
They like, you know, like they own, you know how it is, man. They own it, man. So
and when you perform or play, you know, in scenarios like that, man, with a lot of pressure, a lot of eyeballs on you, man. How do you respond? Like, do you get nervous and then kind of find your groove, or do you kind of come out from Jump Street and just you already locked in?
I'm already locked in because I think it's like I'll be like competing against the scouts, like it's me against you. Like I tweak my mind, like y'all don't like me. I gotta prove myself to make y'all like me. So it's like I kind of give myself an edge to saying, hey, did something to me, or they don't like me, or I just get myself sometimes. Because me personally, I have to play angry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I'm sitting out there, if I'm just jolly jagging and shit is cool, it's not gonna be good for me. So I just kind of tweak my mind to make to make up some kind of foundation that they don't like me.
Yeah. No, I mean that's actually something I don't think is done enough in today's athlete. I think, you know, in our generation, we played a lot more angry. There was a lot different inspirations and motivations for why we performed on the court, why we went hard. You know, it was like some weird stuff going on, but we were motivated by different stuff. And it's a trip. It's a trip to see today's generation. Let me segue really quickly, because I got you here, a Morningside guy. Earlier this year, Inglewood beat Morningside in football like 100-0. I think you might have heard about that or saw that
on Facebook, man. I was
What you think about that, man? What you do you think that was too much, or because it's a rivalry and because you know about the Inglewood Morningside rivalry, did you expect something like that to happen?
Me personally, it was bananas. It was crazy to me that somebody would like it had 100-some points, whatever, in a high school football game. I'm like, what were we over there doing? Did we even got 11 players on the field?
That's what I see.
But on the flip of that, it's like I have no remorse for nobody when we competing. Like, yeah. If I was a coach, if I could beat you by 200, I would have scored 200.
Yeah.
Like, if they scored 100-some points, got to stop them. Like, I don't have – I think Inglewood should have scored more points if they could have.
Yeah.
I would have.
Yeah,
I'm trying to score 500 on you. I don't care about none of your feelings, none of that.
Nah, man, it's
sports is an extra thing. You don't have to play it.
Yeah, yeah, I like that viewpoint, man. But it just shows the it's a shift now in the thinking. It's like we got to stall people out. If I'm better than you, I got to stall you out. Yeah, that's what they own. That's what they own.
I'm trying to take your heart, eat your lunch, all that, and look, I'm gonna need it tomorrow too. So, I mean,
every day of the week.
Yeah. So, I mean, sports is, as far as competition, is a little different now. It's a little bit more sportsmanship, and I get it.
But yeah. Yeah.
As far as me personally,
yeah.
I was total opposite of that. I didn't have no kind of sportsmanship for you.
After Chicago, you got an invite, or I believe that was the order. You got summer league with the Rockets, or how did that work with when you got invited to camp?
After that, I actually went and played in a CBA that year.
Oh, okay.
We played in the CBA. I came back that summer. That's when the Rockets invited me to the camp.
And how was that experience?
They invited me to summer league. You know how summer league is. They divide like 15 people, but they only got one or two spots.
They looking at the
camp. Yeah. It's like 20 dudes here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some dudes here on favor. Some dudes here.
Favor.
I got there kind of because of my agent a little bit. And then Roger Rose was actually there anyway. Mm-hmm. But they had drafted Roger Rose in the first round. So he was actually with Houston when I was working out with him. So I went to play summer league with them, and I did pretty well, man. And they were surprised. And they said, we're going to invite you back in a minute. It's a veterans camp.
Mm. Who was your agent?
I went to veteran camp. And I actually started one game because it's a dude named from Georgia. Last name was Anderson.
Shannon Anderson.
His mom had passed away.
Oh, wow.
And she went to the doctor just for an ordinary checkup, man. And they did something with some reaction, and she passed away. But she rest in peace. And that was the time there was love to bring.
Dead.
That was go away. That was the time. That's my son. That was the time there was love to bring Katina Mobley off the bench.
Oh, okay.
And they started me, you know what I mean? I had like 13 points that game, man. I played pretty well, man.
Wow. So that was around the era with Coutinho and Walt Williams and
the Wiz, yeah, that's
all them dudes.
Because of my dog and Steve Francis was there.
Francis, yeah.
Moochie Norris.
Wow, that's a nice little crew.
Yeah. That was a nice little. Yeah, it was some good dudes too, man. That was like that was the first time I've been around star-studded people who didn't act like that. I did act like normal kind of cats. You know what I mean? Sometimes, you know how it is in the league. Cats be big eye. Yeah, you know, big eye, little you, you know?
Yeah.
That was real cool, man. That was real cool.
That's dope, man. That's dope. So now with Houston, you play a couple preseason games and go through training camp, and then they ended up releasing you.
Dude, the last practice. And they tell me the whole time, they're going to keep me.
Yeah.
Me and Moose are going around looking for apartments for me. I'm like, because like, when I went to camp, I'm like, okay, it's like a needle in a haystack. You make these kind of things. I'm already prepared in my mind. I'm not going to make it, okay? I mean, like, I don't want to fall hard. Yeah. I'm going to go hard. That's just how I go. But they tell me the whole time, we're going to keep you per diem. Got half of my contract for the year for that year. They had to do that. I'm thinking they're going to keep me. Mm. Last practice. I'm talking about the last practice. I'm going to the room. Like, so let me come talk to you. I'm like, bro, go get some ice. And like, nah, bro.
Nah, bro.
Hey, I had, and that's no longer your ice.
Oh my God.
Well, Rudy was real cool, man. Rudy, and I forgot the name of the online, but Rudy was real cool about it, man. They talked for about 30 minutes, man.
Rudy Top Jonovich, okay.
Rudy was cool, man. Over there drinking that coffee and gin. I'm like, hey, Rudy, pass some of that. Rudy was cool, man. They let me down easy, but I took that kind of hard, man. Yeah. After that, man, I went home and I was supposed to go right to the play the CBA to Grand Rapids, and I was like, I'm cool. I'm going to the crib. I went home for about a month and a half.
Yeah, and let's talk about those moments, because I had those kind of moments too, yeah, in my playing career, bro, when I got, you know, I'll get hurt or got cut from somewhere, and I get back home, and I take me about a month and a half to get out of it. And I used to, you know, we call it dissipate. So I used to do things that weren't necessarily good for me or my body. I'll pick up 15 pounds. Now I'm drinking, I'm blowing, I'm doing all kind of extra stuff. And, you know, now I'm jeopardizing the drug test now when I go back. And it's like, you just be like, why is it that we get so in a downward spiral, man, when we don't make it like in a cut situation, bro?
Yeah, so I mean, especially as cats like, man, you are fierce competitors, it's hard to accept that you lose. Yeah. Like, that's actually what you did, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a hard thing to accept. Then you start throwing a pity party about yourself, and then like, why is this person, this coach, this, that. And then after about 30 days, a couple of weeks, the real you come out, the dog come back. You be like, hold up, man, am I just gonna sit here and quit?
Yeah.
Thinking about your upbringing, your parents, and what they instilled in you, your neighborhood. Then you get back to it, man. You know, yeah, but it's not an easy transition, and everybody ain't built for it.
Nah, man, it's not. It's cutthroat, man. It'll shatter your whole thing. Talk about though, because we had a similar experience, man, where the NBA draft. And, you know, I thought I might have been a second round pick. Utah Jazz was talking about something. You know, I had a couple little 52, 53, you know, towards the end of the Drezaf. I was like, okay, I might be up in there.
Right.
But you don't hear your name called. Stace, that moment, man, that moment when you don't hear your name called, you know the draft is over for that year. Just describe it, man. Just describe the feeling, bro.
I never experienced dying or death or anything like that, but it's just... It's almost like living living death a little bit, man, because time stopped for you, because it's like, boom, not only am I broke, I don't have a plan. I don't know what, you know what I mean? Like, what's my next move? Like, what I'm supposed to do now? Yeah. So it's kind of like shell shocking. It's because you don't have no kind of direction, man.
Yeah.
People, and thank God I had the agent I had, Jerome Stanley, who would work with me and who would help me out, who would try to find me places to play, and who, you know, if I was down on my luck, who might throw me a couple of dollars here. You know, it was a real good dude, man.
That's awesome, man. That's, and people sometimes they don't really understand Jerome Stanley, who was Keyshawn Johnson's agent, whose son, yeah, Cassius Stanley, yeah, got signed for a 10-day, I think last week or two. Cassius is in the league playing, but okay. People don't understand how important it is to have an agent or somebody like that in your corner at those times. I had a guy by the name of Jerome Henderson. I don't know if you remember Big Roni. He's big, yeah, OG, 6'11", yeah, OG Rome. So Jerome's my agent, dog. But hey, but after I didn't get drafted, he was in my head every day, man, about working out, about getting, yeah, in the gym, about taking any little job. He sent me to Russia. He sent me to Russia for like 10 racks. He sent me here for like 15. And, you know, he was just like, man, you just got to go get on the plane, bro. Just get on the plane. If I got a gig, just get on the plane. I'm like, all
right,
bro.
Right.
What it did, Stace, was keep me going. And it kept me working, and I had a light at the end of the tunnel, bro. And I think that's something that is very important when you are in a position like we were in. We're trying to scratch and claw and try to make it. I mean, look at nowadays, man. These guys signing these 10-day contracts, and guys that have been out the league for two and three years, and that are just now getting back in. The reason that they're in the position to get back in the league is because they didn't give up.
They didn't give up.
It's right. Because they kept in shape and they kept balling. But people don't get how hard it is.
Man, so look, I used to get out of shape so quick, man, and I didn't get it took me a minute to get back in shape, man.
Hey, real shape.
It's like, why am I out here killing my, like, why am I here doing all this, and like, what am I doing it for?
Yeah, no, it makes no sense to you, and you're just doing it like, what the hell am I doing? But
because one of them years, man, I'm like, flick it, man. I stopped working out and went back to SC.
Yeah. Oh.
I took three classes that semester.
Oh, nice.
One for a team in the CBA called me, a team in Michigan called me, gave me $1,000 a week. And for some reason, I completed the semester, passed all my classes. I was going back to finish the semester, and I left. I should have stayed and finished my school, man.
Man, that's so crazy because,
like, you know, I'm in love with that game so much, man. I was like,
yeah, it's hard to say no, man, especially when you love it, man. It's hard to say no. An opportunity, man, it's like the great – I treated all my opportunities like as if I was in the NBA, as if this was the league. You know, you feel me, Stace? It's like I'm not tripping on where it is or where it's at. I'm trying to go over here and just dominate it. Where did you go, though? Where did you play after you got released from the Rockets training camp? Where did you end up?
I went to I went home for a minute.
Okay.
And it went for Miles. Miles was like, you can't be here. You got to do something. I'm like, so I went to Grand Rapids, Michigan, played for the Grand Rapids Hoops.
Yeah.
Which actually was a good professional organization as far as the CBA. Checks on time.
Yeah.
We had apartments. We had a car. You know, you might go to some CBA teams.
Yeah.
Talking about, he go check, don't cash it till tomorrow. Like, what are you talking? What?
I was at Quad City. That happened to me one time. Isaiah Thomas had bought the CBA when I was.
Oh, that's when he messed the league up. Yeah.
So but to his credit, the checks were on time. We had to go to like two check cashing places in town that we could go to, and I go to one of those. You know, they take their little $15 off my top, but I was getting my bread, dog.
and for me, I was like you, like I just love the game. So wherever I'm at, it's the league, and I'm going and I'm maxing out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm treating like you. I'm treating like this lead. I'm out here having a ball. Like, I'm playing. I'm getting paid to do this. And I do this anyway.
Yeah. How long did that last for you in the CBA? How long did you do the CBA thing for that?
I did the CBA, man. I did the CBA for about 7 years, man. That was my little situation. I go to the CBA.
Okay.
And then I go to Venezuela.
Oh, yeah.
And I pick up me some extra money.
Yeah.
And then I'll try to get a cool job somewhere beginning of the next year if I didn't make the league. That was my whole thing.
You like a lot of us, that was our thing too. I hit the CBA, I tried to find somebody here. It was season. It was because Puerto Rico and Venezuela, you could go get you some money after the season.
And Venezuela give you 12 months in a month. You know what I mean? And it's Vinny. So it's out there. It's a nice place to be as well.
Were you in Caracas? Were you in
Caracas?
Man, how was it?
Man, to the Mundus.
Oh, okay.
Championship. It was crazy, man, because Venezuela is not like one of the places you just go and just be walking around now. Like, it's real poverty over there. It's real poverty, man. It's kind of sad sometimes, though, man. It's a dog infestation over there, like a gang of dogs just running around. It's wild, but I had a bodyguard, so it was cool.
Oh, that's real. But being from L.A., man, being from the hood in L.A., when you go to a place like Venezuela and you see that type of that next level, I won't say next level poverty, but I feel like I've seen some poverty. Next level poverty. I've seen some stuff where it's like, dang, I ain't never seen no shit like this back in the house. What would be your perspective? How did that change or affect you as a person and your perspective on the world?
Oh, it made me appreciate who I was and the things I had a little more, man. It made me appreciate being an American. Because, you know, being a Black man in America is not always the thing to be, or it's not always gravy. So it just gave me a new foundation of being an American and loving who I am and where I come from. Because I'm like, wow, it was like some days I'll be walking to my room, man, I'll buy a couple of chickens, man, and I'm just giving them out to people, man. Because people was really sitting there, like, drinking water from a street. Like, it was it's bad, man. It's bad. It's real bad.
Yeah. Nah, man, that's deep. And so you do Venezuela, the CBA, for about 7 years. What point in your career did I give you that call, man, when I asked you to come to Qatar?
I don't know. And I was like, I was like bugged about that. I'm like, Chris, I'm like, stop it, man. Man, Chris, you might get down, man. What are you talking about?
Wait, why are you so bugged out, man? Stace, why are you so bugged out?
I don't know, because we was such competitors, dog. It's like,
I know.
You can't compete harder than me. Yes, I can.
And just, I know. We was on one.
I was like, man, hold on. Let me see what's up. I'll never walk away for money. I gotta at least see what's up. So I hit you back. You're like, word? You're like, so they're giving me 16 or 18 just to come. I'm like, stop it, man. The Middle East, they ain't playing ball over there. I'm like, stop it, Chris. I get over there, man. You over there living it up. I'm like, oh, Chris, you over here in the cut getting it, huh?
It was a nice situation, Stace. It was a nice situation.
It was hot as hell, but
yeah,
money and the lifestyle, man, I was in Dubai.
Yeah. We was in Dubai early before it was like
training camp was there. It was
for the whole month. We was there for like a month, Stace. We was there chilling for like a month.
Hey, I was a little jealous of you about that. That whole Malaysia experience and that team. And the team was nice. We had hoopers on the team.
We sure did. I still talk to
jump out the gym. I forgot his name, but
Yassine.
Oh my god, Yassine was like, man.
Yeah, he just retired.
Scottie Pippen like stringy long. I'm talking about just retired.
Just retired, like two, three years ago. He just retired, man.
That's amazing.
They won another championship with Todd Day. Todd Day came over there after me and you. Like they brought Todd Day over there. They won another one. They won another one in 2005, and they're like the big 3-on-3 champion. So Qatar is now the top 3-on-3 in Asia. Oh, yeah, man. Wow. Yeah. So the basketball.
It was just kind of like they ain't won nothing before we won one, right?
Nah, man. They hadn't won anything. I think the best finish was the year before, man, when we made it to the championship. But man, that year, 2001, man, I tell you what, man, that team, when you joined the crew, man, it just took us to a whole other type of level. It was definitely, they said that was like the best team that they ever had over there was the team with me and you.
Yeah, big.
Hey, we were sick. But you
African dudes, they was like 6'10", 6'10". We had a real team.
You over there. Hey, because now then we could play in our normal positions at the time. So now you didn't have to worry about doing too much over here trying to grab boards. We can like lock dudes up. I can come off these screens and just come off this pick and roll.
It was like one of the best professional experience I had. Like I went over there to a good team. I was asked to play my role, 15, 16 points, play great defense, get the ball to the shooters, the scores. It was a beautiful thing, man.
Oh, man.
I came over like 40, like 30 days or something like that. Oh, beautiful thing, man.
Unforgettable, man.
I never told you thank you for that, man. I had to salute you for that, man.
Oh, it's all good. Thank you, brother. I always wanted to talk to you about that, man. So then after Qatar, you come back to America. What did you get into at that point?
After Qatar, I'm still playing tonight. I'm still doing my same thing, man. I did that same scenario until I retired, man.
And when did you retire? When did you shut it down? I don't even remember.
I was in the CBA playing for Minnesota Mayhem. Mm. I went to close out on this dude right in the corner, and a dude blew by me. I'm like 34. The dude blew by me, right? Mm-hmm. I hit him with my little check I normally do. So they call that. Because now you can't check moves no more, right? So, man, dude was just getting by me, like, with ease, man, talking to me crazy. You know, I'm out there talking shit. I'm like, you know what? I looked up. I was on the bench. Now I'm sweating, man. I looked around. I said, it's time. And, like, once I can't compete and stop dudes like I want to, it was time to go, man, because, man, people understand my whole thing. Like, when I came to the gym, I'm like, who's supposed to be the superstar? Okay, I need that. You don't get nothing today. Like, if you get something, it's gonna be because I slipped up or you, I don't know what happened. You shouldn't have got that. Like, that was my whole thing coming to the gym, and I couldn't do that no more.
So you said you don't even want to play. If you can't do that, you don't even want to be out there no more.
I didn't want to be out there. It was over, man.
And after you retired, like, what did you get into? How was the adjustment, I guess, into being in the real world? Because, bruh, that is one of the, I talk about it all the time with all my guys, man, just that transition. Because look, unless you transition, this is my theory, Stace, unless you transition into a basketball-related career, right, directly where you can use the skill set that you gained the last 20-something years, then everything else is going to be a little tricky.
Listen, it was like I was just not being born.
Damn.
You know what I mean? It was like I was so shell-shocked, man. I'm talking about, I'm like, anybody doing nothing for you? Like, nobody give a damn who you is no more. It was like shell shocking, man. It was like really shell shocking, man. And I struggled, man, for a minute, man. I actually got into some trouble. I ended up being incarcerated for like a year and some change. Mm-hmm. And I got out of jail, man, and my mom had passed.
Damn.
My mom passed. It's just, people understand, for me, that was my whole world, man. That was my heartbeat. And her passing kind of just like, I don't know, it just kind of like matured me and woke me up, man. I went back to school, looking for jobs. Mm. I took the money she left me and I moved to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And because my kid was out here. I brought her 9 was out here.
Okay.
Right here by a little house, be close to my kid. You know, it's dirt cheap to get something out here.
Yeah. Cool. It's nice.
So, and then I started working as a counselor at this place called Osho Area Learning Center.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing that ever since.
And so as a counselor, you work with kids all the time, of all ages, of all socioeconomic backgrounds, or how does that work?
We have them back at home. We call them SCROC. It's like an alternative high school,
mm-hmm,
for kids that, you know, lacking their credits or maybe a little older, because we got a couple kids, you know, maybe, you know, 20, 21 years old, just graduating, which is a great thing. They stuck with it. So it's a school like that, man. And people think it's a bad school for bad kids, but it's not. It's just for kids who just need a little extra help.
Need a little extra help and got a lot of potential if they get that help. And they
a lot of potential.
And yeah.
And I was kind of mad at myself because I stereotyped them before I got there.
Yeah.
I didn't start learning them. I'm like, oh, I was just as bad as the other people stereotype. My bad. Like, you know,
yeah,
not bad at all. It's just misunderstood.
No, that's dope that you, you know, are dedicating your purpose now to giving back, man, and helping change lives, brother. I wanted to ask you about, with you being in Minnesota, you know, the George Floyd trial, the whole situation up there, man. What was it like? You're from LA, so you seen the riots. You was there with Rodney King. So
I was in the Rodney King.
That's what I'm saying.
I was like, I'm in the paint.
That's what I'm saying.
King. I'm looking like everybody else. I'm getting it. So
what were you
protesting? We was looting.
It was, you was out to go get something. It wasn't no,
yeah, we were in a rap shop. We were, man, this one's a little bit more political, and it hit home a little different because I'm grown man and I was black man, and to see a black man broad daylight get strangled to death in the middle of in the street. It's just like, it's just something I'll never forget, man. Like that image, every time I somebody say George Floyd, I just think of him being strangled to death right there on that street corner. And it was just bananas, man. And I applaud all the young people in Minnesota because that was the majority of the people who was protesting. And they was really protesting. They wasn't looting.
Yeah.
They wasn't trying to come up.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually really protesting for a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing thing to see, but also now I look back on it, like right now, like there's nothing that's changed.
Well,
it makes you kind of angry, but you still don't want to give up the fight, but it makes you kind of angry.
But being a father of three, obviously you're a father, you're raising kids that are going to be the leaders of the next generation. What type of message do you tell them as a father, or just about being comfortable in their own skin and being African American in this day and age? What do you tell your kids? How do you tell them?
Man, especially because I have 2 biracial kids and I have 1 kid that's not biracial.
I do too.
And I just tell them that like you're going to get pulled from 2 different sides. My biracial kids, you're going to get pulled from 2 different sides. But at the end of the day, like, you have to love yourself and choose yourself. And like, you are who you are. And never be ashamed of yourself. At the end of the day, people are going to like you. People are not going to dislike you. And it's okay. Everybody's not going to like you. You're not going to like everybody. And it's okay. But you still have to live yourself and act with a certain kind of respect and dignity and take pride in yourself. I tell my son in California, Cameron, I tell him that all the time. You know.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. Stace, one more question, man. And I'm going to let you go, man. I want to know, if you could go back in time somehow and meet your you know, 13 or 14 year old self, stay supposed when he 13, 14, what would you tell yourself back then?
I can go back in time. I would tell myself that education in school is more important than I thought it was. And more important than education in school was relationships with people, networking. Because like everybody know me and it's always talking about me, but like I don't know nobody. Like I don't network, I don't call people. That part of my life, I think I would work on it a little better. You know, like the networking, the building of relationships with people. That, like you said, the after basketball, the after career stuff. Like how right now you can kind of transfer it into, I see you on with the podcast. I'm like, okay, nice. Like, you know, just to have a supporting group and to be crafty enough to do something different. Sure. I would tell myself that the education is way more important than I actually thought it was. That's dope.
Yeah, that's a dope message, man. Man, you had an amazing career, man. Your story is awesome too, bro, because it's one that, you know, talks about resiliency, man, and making it out of a tough situation. I don't think people really understand how hard it is to make it out of those situations, man, where you don't have your father around and it's just you and moms, man. I have a lot of admiration for the young brothers like yourself and others that have made it out of that situation, bro.
Right now, my pops, we started talking regularly about 2 years ago, and my pops is my dude right now. Talk to him every day.
So you started talking to your pops again?
About 2 years ago.
Damn, how's that been? How's that been the reconnection? Do you feel differently as a father, or does it not really bother you at all?
It's almost like a question being asked. Like you always had a question in your life of where you came from, what you looked like. Because I had a father figure in my life named L.R. Ross Sr. Like, that was my dude. You know, he looked out for me the whole time. I mean, that was my dude. But you always wonder who you come from and why you act a certain way, walk a certain way. So a lot of questions were answered. And I just, you know, as far as being in a relationship with him, like, I kind of just forgave him. Like, because as a kid, you're thinking, like, why my father ain't around? Like, what do I do? Like, did I do something to the dude? So it's kind of like it was like a weight off my shoulder for forgiveness, actually. So it was totally about me. So, but I'm glad I did. And he's a cool dude, man. Cool dude.
Is he going to come to Minnesota to see you?
I don't know, man. I don't think he's coming to Minnesota. People be like, hey, man, we might come in the summer. We got to figure that out.
I ain't trying to mess with him.
People is not feeling this cold because right now it's probably like 7 degrees right now.
7 and 8 degrees, bro. I'm cool on that.
No, man. We don't really do that where we come from. We come from the palm trees and you know what I mean.
It's sunny right now. I'm looking outside. Hey, I got the sun. I got a mountain right here. I'm chilling now.
But here's the thing I would say that I'm most upset about my whole career is, like, everybody always talk about football with me. I mean, I get it. I play football. But I just think I never get enough credit for being a basketball player. You know what I mean? Like, I was off at 10 in a conference where it was, like, real guards in this conference. It's like, if you played in the Pac-10 back when we played, it was a different kind of conference. Not saying anything now, but.
Absolutely.
Every night.
You talking about high level guys too, high draft picks, lottery picks, number two pick Mike Bibby, all type of Jason Terry coming off the bench, first rounder coming off the bench. So like it stays. You was out there drawing the toughest defensive assignment probably every single time you stepped on the floor. So you got to really be up in all these dudes like a lot. Like that's the thing people got to understand about you. Your film from college. That's why I had so much confidence in Qatar bringing you over. They were like, "Where did he play?" I'm like, "Don't worry about it. I know what time it is, my guy." Like I seen him in the Pac-10, dog. Like I know what he locking dudes up, bro. He's locking dudes up. So no, Steph, you did it, man. And it's a credit to your game and the athlete. That's why I say, man, you were an incredible athlete, bro. To do that in football, bro, and then to be all Pac-10 in that era, bro. Think about the two sports stars that you came up with, okay? Guys like Antonio Carrion or guys like, you know, there were other guys that were dope.
Yeah.
They didn't take it to the level, man. They weren't all Pac-10 in the heyday of the conference, right? Okay, so that's I think that sets you apart and why we all look at you and revere you the way we do, bro. I think people realize it, bro. People give you that love. You still talked about, bro. Like it's you be on Twitter. Hey, wait till I come out with this pod on Twitter. They're gonna be like, oh, I was wondering what happened to Stace and this and that. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah,
man, but I was always a low key guy, man. Like, I didn't really want too much press and headlines, man. All I want to do is ball, man.
Yeah, that's what's up, bro. Yeah. Well, man, you be good, man. I appreciate your time today, brother, man. I'd love to do this again at some point, man. You stay safe, man, and good luck in everything you're doing, bro.
Man, you family, man. It's always love, man. Appreciate
always.
You.
Always. I appreciate you. Stace Bozeman.
All right.